Blog Talk Radio.
I'm just so broke, you won't believe. Can't get a dollar out of me. And as far as I can see, I'm losing control like a bad disease. No, I just can't get relief. I've been shot down by the life police. Now every day I try to rise, but I can't succeed. Can anybody find a cure for me? You can be bitter, bitter, bitter. Or you can be better, better, better. Great life gives you lemon. Instead of champagne. Now every day is like a brand new year. I throw my hands up in the air like I just don't care. I'm on walking down the street feeling like, oh yeah, oh yeah. Well, at the bottom of the gas now, I feel clear. So now I laugh just a little more. I'm getting much taller than I did before. I know I'm not where I need to be. But I thank God that I'm not where I used to be. I used to be bitter, bitter, bitter. And now I feel better, better, better. Great life gives you lemon. Instead of champagne. No worry, little children. And don't complain. Whoa, remember your golden. Your body don't sugar cane. Great life gives you lemon. Take lemonade.
Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on.
I would say for a reason that I can't explain. Got something new to believe in. I'm awakened again. How many miracles I have seen each day. If I can just get out of my own way. Well, life gives you lemon. Instead of champagne.
I'm a man of many talents. I'm more talented than Alex Boyer. More people ask for my autograph than for him. They're not going to tell you that. That little, like, rap part, where we're like, no, 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 lemonade, no. So dumb. It's already been done like a billion times. But luckily I was in the shot because I saved it. Redemption. You're welcome, Alex.
Well, good evening, everyone. And this is If Life Gives You Lemons, Make a Martini Show. Your host, Gail St. Francis Johnson, formerly known as Miss Delicious. Our show is for the tame and the untamed with a dash of humor. Life is to make it. You may be rich, but unhappy or broken happy. You may have had many adversities in your life. How many peepots did you have? Ever went from victim to becoming victorious? Ever been down so low you could swing your legs on a dime? Do you have a sense of humor and laughed at yourself? What is your overall view of life? Want to vent or just have something to get off your chest? If you answer yes to one of these questions, this show is for you. You get free exposure, If you're a business owner, starting a business, author, expert, or just want to share information of importance, I invite you to come on as a guest and let's chat up. Sorry, there'll be no discussion or politics. If you're interested in becoming a co-host, email me at gjdelicious37@gmail.com. Again, that email address is gjdelicious37@gmail.com. And again, I am so glad to be back. I went through a few adversities myself. Back in February, I had a complete knee replacement. And I've talked to different people who've had the same surgery that I had. But, you know, I guess surgery affects different people in different ways. Now, how it affected me, I really would never want to have a knee replacement again in my life. I would rather have a baby before I have a knee replacement. The God's honest truth, that knee replacement, it was horrendous. Horrendous. I even watched the video of how they do the knee replacement before I had the surgery. But coming out of that surgery, oh my goodness, it was horrible. I went in the hospital on a Monday, came home that Tuesday. But after getting home, I thought that I could be home alone by myself, take care of myself, do this or do that. No. It doesn't work like that. My leg, I couldn't even lift my leg on its own. I had to assist myself in lifting my leg because it felt like it was lead. It felt like it was a ton. I could not sleep in any position but my back. It was the longest time. Maybe about 4 or 6 weeks, something like that, I slept on my back. Now, I had a girlfriend who I wanted to stay with her. She really helped me out a lot, her and her husband. And I want to make a shout out to them, Shirley and husband Mikey, for assisting me, taking me to pee, you know, changing my ice pack, you know, doing things for me that I could not do by myself. Anyhow, that surgery changed me mentally, physically, and spiritually. And I don't know if it had anything to do with age or, you know, like I said, because I had other people that had the surgery, but I didn't get in depth on how it changed them, because I'm telling you, surgery changed me, like I mentioned, spiritually, mentally, and physically. After I had the surgery, I noticed the changes were, because every time I would eat something, I would eliminate. I had rare elimination, which was bothersome to me because, like I said, I've been so used to every time I would eat something, it would be eliminated. That's the normal way and how it's supposed to be. Then I couldn't sleep. I was irritable. I was in pain. It was just like, and then my spiritual aspect of it was, God, please help me over this pain. I was just so angry because I was in such pain. And that type of pain, I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. And I think about that. The pain was horrendous. What did come back when I left my friend Shirley's house and I came home, my church family surrounded me with love and care and attention as well. I got flowers, I got food, I even had assistance with paying for my therapy, because the therapy I had to go twice a week, and that was $80 a week that I did not have. So my church family, they helped to pay for that. Thank God for that. And, you know, just getting around the pain of getting in and out of the car, the pain of going to therapy, and, you know, like mentally I wasn't, you know, I just was angry because of the pain that I was in. So finally, and then I was on opiates. Oh my goodness, that's just, and I didn't want to become addicted to them, which I didn't, thank God, because I was on a very low dose of them. that I need a dose of them, but it did take the pain. I used my ice pack, you know, had my leg propped up, you know, did everything that the doctor had required me to do because I was determined to get over the pain that I was in one way or another. So then when the pain finally began to subside, I went from, you know, with a walker to then cane to eventually with the cane. But I still was in pain because my leg, when I would lay down at night, I was beginning to like lay on my side, put a pillow between my legs, and that was a little bit comforting to me, but it still was pain. My leg felt like it was when I would try to bend it. And at times, right now, I still go through that, even though my knee is so good now, and I had my surgery in February. And like I said, just going through what I went through was horrendous. I do not wish this surgery on anybody, and like I also mentioned, I'd rather have a baby before I ever have knee surgery again. Through, the doctor had explained as well that it would be anywhere from 6 months to a year before completely healed. I don't know what that means by completely healed because I still feel the spike that's in my leg. I still can feel that. And, you know, sometimes it gets stiff and sometimes it feels like the seeds running up my leg. And sometimes if water is running down my leg, you know, it has all these different feelings that are still going on since the surgery, but my knee is good. My knee, no more pain in my knee. Now it's my leg. So I'm just saying all that to say that I was incapacitated, you know, from February, and I've been up and about and getting around pretty good late. I just, you know, have been doing some other things, like trying to get myself back mentally to where I was at before I even had the surgery. So when you have surgeries, I'm just going to speak for myself because I can't speak for everybody else. But me, having that surgery changed me, like I said, physically, mentally, and spiritually. I don't want to go through it again. Now, I had surgery on my left knee. My right knee at times gives me little itty bitty problems, but I'm praying that it does not turn out knee surgery on my right knee because I really, truly don't want to go through that again. I don't. And I can almost imagine when a person does have surgery, they have to go through some type of change physically and spiritually and emotionally. I said I was so angry being in pain and, you know, getting up and having to go to the bathroom. They gave me a porta potty. And it was just, oh my goodness, it was just miserable having that surgery. And I had also considered having surgeries, personal surgeries, like I wanted to have a tongue-tuck breast augmentation, the worst. But then I thought about it. I don't want to go through any type of pain. I don't know what the pain is because I just don't want to go through the pain because, number one, introducing those chemicals to my body is what set my body off, set my body out of tune, you know, taking those opioids because I take them only because the pain was so horrendous. I was taking muscle relaxers, what other relaxers, opiates, and Motrin, putting all those chemicals in my body. I felt that had changed up my chemistry. That's why I wasn't able to eliminate like I do or did. Once everything started subsiding, the pain, the agony, my attitude changed, my spirituality changed, and everything got back to normal. And I'm back to elimination whenever I eat something. I lost weight. I lost weight during that surgery, which was that was the best part because I did need to lose weight. and I lost weight, and you know, just thing that I had went through, and that was a major surgery as far as I'm concerned, because I've had two live births. And one thing about when you pray and you know you have a baby, once that baby comes out, pain is, now you may have to get a few stitches or whatever, but the pain is nothing. When I say nothing, knee replacement. And I can think, I was speaking to a gentleman. He had a knee, he had his right knee replaced and his left hip replaced at the same time. Oh Lord, I just imagine that. And also, you know, a friend of my daughter had two knees at the same time. I mean, it's no way. I don't think I could survive that. Not both of them. That means you're just hopeless, helpless, and somebody would have to be there for you. Someone would have to be there for you. But, you know, I'm just, you know, talking about that because maybe some there may have had a knee replacement and was going through maybe the same things that I was going through and couldn't understand why. Not to say that, you know, everybody's doing the same thing I went through, but maybe there is someone out there listening that did go through the same I went through. And I just testified that, you know, my reasonings and what happened to me. So that's one of the little tragedies I had. And like I said, it was in February. And in February, I had that surgery February 18th. And as you guys know, February the 19th is Smokey Robinson's birthday. And as long as I've been on this Blog Talk Radio, I had my show, I always celebrated his birthday. I was too out of it to celebrate Smokey Robinson's birthday. And I really felt bad about that because I have listeners who listen and they know what I do every February. As a matter of fact, that's the reason I kept my show after charging, because at one point Blog Talk Radio was free. But I said I wanted to show because I love me some Smokey, and I wanted to do this show. So, but this year, I was devastated. I could not do anything. And, you know, I'm apologizing to my listeners who did not hear that show this year, but trust and believe, next year, I'm going to do something very special, you know, for Smokey Robinson's birthday. So I apologize to all my listeners who then, when did Smokey Robinson's special, his birthday. Okay, now, the tragedy is almost over because, like, it's a new year in February. Look so forward to how it's going to feel now because I still can feel the spike that's in my leg, but my knee is working wonderfully. Okay. I had another tragedy, a personal tragedy, but I'm going to share this anyway because maybe there's someone out there that went through the same thing that my family going through or went through. But I have a very dysfunctional family. My mom and dad are dead. My father died in 1972. My mother died in 1965. My father was killed in front of the house. My mom died from lung cancer. I have two brothers that are dead, and my sister recently died August the 30th. I'm going to give you a little background as far as, you know, the tragedy of my sister dying was such a tragedy to me and hurtful and all out mean what happened, because I have, like I said, my family is dysfunctional. I have a niece. I'm not putting them out there, but I have a niece. It's so diabolical, evil, until I don't even understand how she doesn't realize the things done to people, how she's hurt people and disregarded people like they were trash. And she actually thinks or she feels that the things, the way she feels and treat people is right, which is not. And granted, I love my niece because you know why? God has meant me to love my family. He meant me to love everybody, including my enemies. So if I can love my enemies, I can, you know, love my niece. Anyhow, she's just this person that I don't know what happened to her the way in her life, but I do know that she's a very evil person. She wants to be in control of everything, and if she can't be in control, you know,
true, that's cause it's all about you.
All right, welcome back. That was Aretha Franklin, Just My Daydream. Okay, as I was talking last week, I hope you heard, guys heard everything that I said, because like my information came from my studio telling me that I was not connected. I just hope that I was. Anyway, I was talking about the second tragedy that I had went through this year. In August, I lost my sister. And I was explaining to you about my niece, who my sister's daughter. She was just evil for no reason. You know, just a mean, hateful, angry person. I guess because of things that weren't going well in her life, so she figured she could take it out on everybody else or just be mean to everybody else. Anywho, we went through a little episode where she had stopped speaking to me for, this is maybe about the 10th time or whatever, but the last time she stopped speaking to me, she really exuberant more hatred than any of the other times that she had stopped speaking to me. So my sister, who has been sick for many years, had lost her home in D.C., so she came down here to stay with my niece. And I didn't know what was going on in that household because, number one, like I said, my niece was not speaking to me. But come to find out, my baby brother had called me from D.C. and told me that my sister was in the hospital. Okay. So I go and see my sister, and she looks like, you know, she still looked at good, and we had a great conversation, even though we had went through a little thing as well. But my sister is a forgiving person, and she's a loving person. So I go see my sister in the hospital, and she looked like she was so happy to see me. I visited her at least 3 or 4 times when she was in the hospital, the time that she went to the hospital. But I always waited until after my niece had went to work because I didn't want to run into her and have an episode in the hospital where either I would be locked up or she would get locked up. So then my sister, I didn't know, like I said, I didn't know the conditions that was going on down there with my niece and my sister's house, in my niece's house. Come to find out, when I spoke to my sister, she had told me the reason why she was in the hospital because she had fallen. Now, my sister has fallen so many times before in D.C. At one point, I was in the house where she had fallen down the steps, and she had refused to go to the hospital. She looked like somebody had beat her up. She had 2 black eyes, big knot on her forehead, big hematoma on her forehead, and bruises throughout her body. So when I did finally, because I told her, I said, Grace, you're going to have to go to the hospital. I cannot stand to see you looking the way you're looking, especially hitting her head, because, you know, sometimes a person can develop brain injuries from hitting their head. So I took her to the hospital. They wanted to call Protective Service on me because they thought I had beat her up. I said, no, I would never do that to my sister. I love my sister. So she told them what had happened. But getting back to down here, so we were talking in the hospital, my sister, so I asked her, I said, well, you know, what happened? What brought you to the hospital? She said, first she was in a rehab, and then they brought her to the hospital, Cape Fear. So she said she had fallen. Since she had been down here, she had fallen 6 times. I said, well, where was Jean at? Oh, excuse me, I didn't mean to say that name, but I asked, where was her daughter? She said she was at work. I said, well, what did you do when you fell? She said she just laid there until she got herself together and could get up. I said, well, what were you doing when you fell? She said she was trying to get her food out of the microwave. My niece would leave food in the microwave for my sister to eat. And my sister, you know, is very fragile. She's very fragile. Like I said, she's been sick for years. And she fell 6 times, so that sort of like went through me. And I just said, you know, I can't understand. And then here's the kicker. She was locked in my sister in the house by herself. My niece worked two jobs. Sometimes she would go out at 9 o'clock in the morning, come back 11:30 at night. Mother in there all the time by herself. Helpless. Because I asked her, I said, well, how do you like Fayetteville? She said, I haven't seen anything ever since I came down here. I've been bedridden. I said, oh, Lord, this is just stories. It's getting worse and worse. So anyway, it came to a point where I was feeling that my sister was getting inadequate care. So I talked it over with a few people, and I told them what I wanted to do. I wanted to call Department of Human Services and see if they could, you know, give my niece a hand in helping her, or at least check on my sister or something of that magnitude. Anyway, when I called them, my niece's sister, we had had a conversation, and she was telling me that, you know, about how her sister was leaving her mom down there, you know, in the house by herself, so forth and so on, and blah, 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 blah. And if they found out, she'll get in trouble, this and that. So then she said, and then she implicated, because you might call the Department of Human Services. I said, wait a minute. I'm not going to call the Department of Human Services. And I said that because it was before I found out what my sister was really going through. So they went down there, did a little investigation, whatever, whatever. My niece from D.C. called me, cursed me out. Now, I'm her aunt. She called me, cursed me out, and said, you was wrong for doing that, blah, blah, blah. I don't, you know what, to this day, I don't feel that I was wrong. Because, number one, my sister needed more care than what her daughter was giving her. Anyway, so my niece, she lied her way out of everything, and I called the Department of Human Services and asked them, you know, what was going on, because the lady had called me back, and she said this was happening. She got somebody to stay with your sister. Blah. I said, well, who is the person? She tells me, well, I can't give you that information. I said, well, I can tell you this much. I don't believe it. I said, my niece is a liar, and I don't think there's anybody down there taking care of my sister. She said, well, I can't get into your family dynamics. So I said, I'm not asking you to get into family dynamics. I said, it's just the point that I know my niece. I know she's a liar, and I know there's nobody down there taking care of my sister while my niece is at work. So she said she had talked to the person. Okay, so what? My niece could have got anybody. Well, not anybody, because she don't have that many friends, but she could have got this girl that she did know in Marla who had invited her to North Carolina to say whatever, you know, because you can't see through the phone. You don't know. And my thing is, these people should have been doing welfare checks every other day or, you know, twice a week or something like that to make sure that someone was in there with my sister. They didn't do that. They just took my niece's word. So then my niece moved because my brother, he kept sending the police there to do welfare checks on my sister. Every time, nobody opened the door, but the lady from the Department of Human Services swore that somebody was there. Then one time the police went there and the girl from next door runs out and said, oh, she went to the hospital last night. She was rushed to the hospital last night, called the hospital. My sister was never admitted to the hospital. They was trying to, you know, that girl was covering up for my niece. So anyway, my niece moved. She thought everything was smooth sailing. That I don't have her address. I don't know where she lived. But, you know, just like it says in the Bible, all secrets will be revealed. I do have her address. I do know where she lives. I've never been to her house, but I do have her address, and I do know where she lives. So anyway, they moved. And I was, you know, calling the hospital every other, periodically, to see if my sister was admitted to the hospital because I really wanted to see her. Mind you, my sister had a feeding tube. My niece would come home, feed her 11 o'clock at night or whenever she felt like feeding her. So anyway, I think it was August the the 29th or something like that, she calls her son, my niece calls her son in D.C., tells him that your grandmother only has 24 hours to live, that and her sister was down here, her sister's daughter, and her daughter's daughter, and another person. They was telling everybody but me. We calling everybody, letting them give their goodbyes to my sister. So I said, well, let me call my niece, my niece's sister. I called her, and she says, yeah, Ma is not going to be here much longer. So she said, I'll put you on speaker so you can say your goodbyes to her, which was good because I know Jean had no intentions of ever saying anything to me again in life. So I'm saying my goodbyes and, you know, crying. My sister can't respond because she's gotten to the point where she couldn't respond. She's more or less just getting ready to pass. So I'm saying my goodbyes and crying and, you know, telling her how much I love her. I'm going to miss her. And I'm glad that we mended our broken relationship and, you know, just thanking her for everything that she's ever done for me in her life and thanking God that she put us together as sisters, you know. So then I asked my niece, I said, can I please come and see her before she passes? She tells me I got to go. I said, can I please, please come and see my sister before she passed? She said, I got to go. So I asked to speak to the sister who my sister was staying with, the other niece. She said, she's at work. Your mother's getting ready to die, and you're at work. That was something else that just tore at my heart because her job is to take care of elderly people and disabled people. Here your mother is laying in your house, getting ready to die, and you're out taking care of somebody else's parents or some other elderly sick person. So anyway, I said to myself, well, thank you, God, for at least letting me see her when you did let me see her. So then I think it was my daughter who had called me and told me that my sister had passed. Then my niece, I had texted her, you know, but she never answered that text, the sister. And she texted me and said, Mom's gone. I said, oh, I already know. Okay, so that was very painful, very hurtful. I could not, and I still to this day, you know, go through changes about that because that was my sister. She was my sister before she was their mother. And for them to take it upon themselves to tell me that I could not see my sister before she died, that was just horrible. Horrible because I know that my sister wanted to see everybody that she could before she died. But guess what? She only got to see her two daughters' face, her granddaughter, her great-granddaughter, whoever that other person was, because I don't know who the other person was, but someone had taken a picture of all of them. But, and then they had a service. My sister was cremated. You know, it was just terrible, horrible. And when I sent my niece that text, I told her, I said, one thing I would never, ever do is keep a loved one from seeing someone before they die. I don't care what the circumstances are. I said, because that is the time when you are supposed to come together as a family. But to them, they feel that it was right. They actually feel what they did was right. So they are not God-fearing women. They don't know God. They're not trying to know God. And as far as their salvation, all I can do and all I am going to do is pray for them because when judgment day comes, they ain't going to understand why. They're not going to understand why. But, you know, like I said, I love my family. I love everybody. Because I am a God-fearing woman. I'm not a perfect person, but I'm not the person that I used to be either. I'm still striving to be God-like, and I'm still striving in this world of evil and all these different worldly things that are going on. I'm trying to separate myself from them, but it's hard. It's really, really hard because the devil is busy. And I was listening to D.L. Hughley yesterday, and he said the biggest trick that Satan pulls on people is making them not believe that he exists. But I'm telling you, you better beware. He exists. He definitely exists. And he may use you as a tool to do something to somebody else. Or, you know, you just have to have your guards up, be aware, and always, always be in tune with God. Because if you're not, you're going to be a lost soul. And I'm not preaching or anything like that. I'm just rant. So those were the two tragedies that I went through this year. And the second is, you know, it's really bad too, but that affected my heart. That affected my heart. And if anybody is having issues with a family member, please, please try to make up, because family is all you have. And then they say sometimes a stranger will treat you better than family. That's true. That is true. But God gave each of us a family for a reason. And if we learn different things by dealing with strangers, we should apply the goods that we learn from strangers with our family. You know, because I've seen a lot of loving families, a lot of caring families, and I wish, you know, that my family could be the same way. And I'm not even going to get on the fact that my oldest sister, she says I'm dead to her. But, you know, that's all good, too. Because if she has the time to exuberate that much energy, negative energy, more power to her. I don't even think about it anymore, because when I first heard her say that, it really hurt me. Because, like I said, I love my family. And her reasoning for saying that is because of the simple fact the way that she is. She's angry or something happened to her along the way, and she just, but, you know, it's things have been very good for me because I have a very good church family, and I still have my brothers and some cousins, you know, that are lovable and loving. So, but negative energy, I can't deal with it. I can't deal with it. And I won't deal with it because it's just like somebody spreading a cancer. Cancer is one of the worst diseases that can attack the body. And trust and believe, I'm not going to let nobody give me their cancer. Mm-mm. Even though you can't catch it from another person, but what I'm saying. But that's, you know, basically what's going on in my dysfunctional family. Okay. Now, I also wanted to speak on the issue of R. Kelly. I watched the Surviving R. Kelly on Lifetime. Very eye-opening. I also watched the video of when he urinated on that little 13 or 14-year-old girl. And watching her perform with him, that was not the first time that she's performed with this man, because she was doing it like a pro. Oral sex and, you know, and I'm just saying, R. Kelly was molested by his sister. Why isn't she, or why haven't she been brought up on some type of charges as well? Because she created that monster. She created that monster. And according to his brother, he said that she and him are still close to this day. You know, he liked what she did to him when she was molesting him. But what made her do something like that? You know, I couldn't imagine my brothers touching me inappropriately. I couldn't even imagine that, or my father or uncle or cousin. I can't imagine that. And I know it must have some horrible effects on the people that it did happen to. Because look at R. Kelly, a pedophile. The man, he's so engulfed in sex until it's pathetic. Now he's locked up crying. He's in poor health. He needs to see both of his girlfriends. He needs sex. He needs this. He needs that. But he wasn't thinking about all that when he was out there molesting them young girls, getting people to bring him young girls, stalking the McDonald's, playgrounds, or wherever else he was getting these young girls from. He wasn't thinking about the consequences. And he was spending his money as bribery to keep these things hidden. You know, because even his security, you know, were bringing him young girls, sending them out to get young girls. And these two girls that are still claiming to be his girlfriend, living in the Trump Towers or wherever they live in, they are definitely mentally ill. Definitely, because number one, first of all, why would a woman want to be with a man and you're number two? And even if she was number one, she still is still a number two. So there's something, you know, maybe they're suffering from the Stockholm syndrome or some type of thing is going on mentally with them. Maybe he hypnotized them or brainwashed them. Something is going on with those two young ladies. They're thinking about getting into movies, making a movie, writing a book to get money, get them out of jail. Let him stay just where he belongs. Because what he did to that little 14-year-old girl, and then the fact of the matter, her parents denied that that was their daughter in that tape. They need to go to jail too. But see, the whole situation was not handled as if. Now, I bet you a dime to a dollar, if R. Kelly had been, if he had done that to one or two white little young girls, he'd have been locked up. He'd have been in jail years ago when that first tape came out. Because there's more tapes than that one, but that one I just was at work one day and a guy had bought the VHS because that was before CDs and stuff came out. Had bought it to work, and I had purchased it. And in that tape, he's also with another. And the things that he's doing are just, why would you even take something like that? You know, and then he's trying to say that that was his brother in that room. But someone knocked on the door. You could clearly hear them say, "Robert." And he says, "I'll be out in a minute." So when he finished urinating on the little girl, he takes, I didn't see the denomination of the money, but he threw some money down next to her as if she was a prostitute. You know, and I'm just saying, he, even his wife said derogatory things about him. Then she got on there and tried to show out on YouTube, talking about, "That's my baby daddy, da-da-da-da, he can sing, he can do this." I don't care if he was Santa Claus. And I don't even believe in Santa Claus, but if he was Santa Claus and he did wrong, he's wrong. So how he got away with it for so long, paying the judges off, paying these people off, those people, now he's crying broke and in poor health. You know, it's funny how when they get caught up in their crimes and things, they cry, "I'm in poor health," or "I'm sick," and all this other kind of stuff. When you're doing wrong, always remember there are consequences to pay. You're going to pay one way or another. You know, and if man don't get you, God certainly will. And God is going to get him for all he's done. Then they had him in isolation. Put him in population. Put him out there with the rest of the boys. And he may come out somebody's wife. But, you know, just the thought of how he's complaining and he's talking about his child support and all this and that and whatever, 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 whatever. Cry, why. You know, like I said, everybody was involved with that. And then this is the thing, if that was a white girl, I'm just going to say, throw this out there, what they should have did for that little black girl. They should have gave her, and that those people who said, that's not my daughter, that all they had to do was get that little girl a DNA test, and the parents a DNA test. And when they found out they lied, send them to jail for lying and pimping their daughter. Because I understand after that, R. Kelly had gave them this lavish vacation and, you know, $100,000 and gave the little girl some money not to talk and all this old crazy stuff. But that's horrible. It's really terrible. And whatever happens to him, he bore it on himself. If he goes to jail and get raped or killed or whatever, because they don't like pedophiles and they don't like rapists and things of the sort. So if he goes to jail and get in the population and somebody decides, you know what, he did that to a 14-year-old girl, and I got a 14-year-old daughter at home, I'll make sure he don't never do that to nobody again in life. It could turn out like that. But I really wish that he could be in jail for the rest of his life and just suffer. And his girlfriend would be his five fingers because they generously letting him, them girls come and see him. And he's upset because he can't have conjugal visits. Well, you got a right-hand girlfriend and a left-hand girlfriend. Let them give you your conjugal visits. And whatever happens, happens. R. Kelly, I don't care how good you sing, which you sing very good, very good. But that does not negate the fact that you are a pedophile, a pervert, and just horrible person, a horrible person. All his songs, sexually inclined. I want to drive you like my Jeep, bump and grind. You know, every song he has is sexually explicit. It's like the little song he gave Aaliyah to sing, Rock the Boat. And I'm quite sure everybody's familiar with that song and what it means. But he just needed help from when that's happened to him. I don't know if his mother and father was dead or if they're dead or if they're living, but he needed help from the very beginning, but he liked what his sister was doing to him. So he basically, you know, just took it like that. But the sister, she should be brought up on some type of charges for doing that to him. Because she was, I think she was older than him. Even if she wasn't older than him, she was a pedophile as well. And she's out there probably living her life because I understand he bought her a house and they're still good friends. Hey, how many has she been to see him? But what's going on with them at this particular point in his life? You know? But anywho, R. Kelly, I have no sympathy for you, honey. None whatsoever. I'm just sorry that, you know, you chose that path to go down. And now you want everybody to feel sorry for you and to say, poor R. Kelly, he shouldn't be locked up. Free R. Kelly. Free him for what? Because the ones out there screaming and hollering, free R. Kelly, and the minute he do something to your daughter or whatever, then you'd be saying, he need to be locked up. So always remember, the biggest voice is to say nothing at all. Because guess what? He's going to get what he deserves. He's going to get exactly what he deserves. So, getting off that R. Kelly, let's talk about Wendy Williams. As we all know, she's finally divorced her husband, the cheater, the liar, and the scam artist. She finally divorced him, but she wasn't talking about it. She took off all that time to go into rehab because she had started drinking and drugging behind the fact that she finds out that he's had another baby by his mistress, had the mistress bought a house not that far from where him and Wendy had a house and had his mistress in their house. You know, all these crazy things was going on in her life So she goes on this drug binge sabbatical. And, you know, when she comes back, she's very hush-hush about it. She gets up and throw a few tears here and there. Hi, I went into the Hunter Foundation rehab. I just went there to rest and whatever, you know, but that's not the issue. The issue is you get up there and talk about what goes on in everybody's life, and that's your job. That is your job. But you should be just as transparent about yourself when you're talking about other people, because somebody one day is going to be waiting for you in a dark alley somewhere when your guards are down and lights are going to be out for you, because you've created a lot of enemies, a lot of enemies, you know. But she thinks because, you know, she has a talk show, she can say this, she can say that. She even made a comment when Idris Elba made the cover of, I forgot what magazine, but he was voted as the most sexy man, sexiest man in America. She stood up there and say something like, oh, I got to talk to K. Michelle about that, because to see what he got in his pants, because if he doesn't have it going on in his pants, I don't see how he can be the sexiest man. Your penis does not make you the sexiest man in the world in the first place. And why are you worrying about what's going on in Idris Elba's pants? You should have been worried about what was going on in your husband's pants when he was exposing himself to his mistress, getting her pregnant and having a baby. That's what you should have been concerned about. And for her to say something like that, that is so off-centered. Until what difference does it make, the size of his penis? Did you want it for yourself? You know, then she throws these little slurs out. So-and-so, I have a nice apartment in New York, blah, 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 nice bachelor pad, and so-and-so's been to my place, so-and-so's been to my place, blah, 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 this and that. Okay, that's good, because that's what you should have been doing when your husband was tipping on you. She should have been divorced him, but just trying to hold on to him for what, I don't know. Maybe he was abusive to her because it's understood that he used to beat her. But I don't know if that's true. That's just something I heard through the grapevine that was going around. And then a lot of things they were doing, because I understand they used to have threesomes. You know, but these are all hearsay things. It hasn't been written in stone. But these are things that, you know, were going through the grapevine. And, you know, about his mistress being, that's why she left that house in New Jersey or wherever it was at. But and then he had the audacity to ask for spousal support. That just goes to show how much of a man he really was. He was a kept man by Wendy Williams. She got him to work at the studio where she was working, being her manager, this and that. Let that man go get a real job. And I don't know if she's paying child support, because her son punched him in the nose when he had asked something. He was trying to get spousal support, and his son had spoke up and said something about it. And they got in a tussle, and he punched him in the nose, and they went to court. But naturally, the charges were dropped. But that's kind of low for a man who has been already living off of a woman all them years, and then he don't want spousal support. Spousal support, to me, I think should always go to women, because sometimes women get married to these men, they have no education, have never worked anywhere, then they get divorced and go marry somebody else and spend all their money up on them. No, take care of your first wife first. You know, but a man can always make it. He can always make it, just like he made it with Wendy Williams. I'm quite sure there's another Wendy Williams out there for him if him and his mistress aren't still together. But Wendy, when you talk about other people, don't be afraid to talk about yourself. Because you be saying some things on television that would make a person want to punch your lights out. And I'm quite sure you make quite a few enemies, just like... oh, my goodness, the girl's name was on the tip of my tongue. I can't think of her name. But anyway, she was on The Apprentice, And she came on to Wendy's show, and she said something before she came out. And when she came out, she lit that stage up. Wendy's eyes got big, and she tried to throw back, saying this and saying that. I can't think of the young lady's name, but she worked at the White House, too, a black young lady. And she wrote a book. She'd been on a show. She had her own little special show. And she was engaged to that guy who played as the big guy in the Green Mile. Can't think of her name. It's on the tip of my tongue, but you guys may know who I'm talking about. She made an enemy out of her. And, you know, so many other, you know, stars that she said things about. And sometimes she said unnecessary things about people. You know, trying to really, as if she knows them personally. You know, and then soon somebody would say something, because somebody had did an interview of her. I saw it on YouTube, and she had said something about her husband. She said, oh, no, we can skip that. And then she said she is doing this movie that's going to come on Lifetime or somewhere next year. If people think that I'm badgering my husband and putting him down, got another thing coming. She's badgering him and putting him down, but it ain't going to be in front of nobody. Believe that. Because I know she done called him a bunch of, a whole lot of names besides the child of God. Especially the fact of the matter, he done got another woman pregnant, brought him into their home. You know, just the things that he was doing. Well, I think he even bought her a car with Wendy Williams' money, or the money she was paying him, or whatever. I just think that it's terrible for someone to sit around and talk about other people, and you're asked questions about yourself, and you clam up. Everybody knows practically what happened. You know, the word gets out there about hook or crook. Some of it may be true, some of it may not be true, but I'd rather just go on and tell people what happened opposed to having these rumors flying around and people saying this and that behind my back. Let it come directly from your mouth, Wendy. Wendy, your husband cheated on you, got another, his mistress pregnant, you went into rehab because you couldn't handle it, started drinking and drugging. You know, just admit those things and stop being such a negative person when it comes to yourself. Stop running from the truth. You know, just put it out there so people can stop speculating, stop putting out rumors, and stop lying if they're lying or whatever's going on. Just set the record straight. And I think she wrote a book or something. She said, I'm talking about my drag experience. Then Judge Mathis was on her radio show. This was years ago. He ripped another butthole in her. She was trying to get all in his business, but he set her straight for real. So, Wendy, be a little bit more transparent. Ain't nothing wrong with telling people what happened, because you sit up there and tell everybody else's business. Tell a little bit about yourself. Set the record straight. Let people know just what happened with you and Kevin. Okay. Now I'm going to get on, this is going to be very brief, about the man in the White House, Trump. He has mental issues that probably stem from his childhood or maybe when he got grown, but he definitely has mental issues. He's like the Don, untouchable. Anything he say, anything he do is okay. And they always justifying things that he say, things that he do, da-da-da-da-da, whatever. You know, that's why I'm not a political person. I don't vote. I don't even care. You know, I mean, I care about what's going on in the world, you know, as far as, like, people who are being affected by this man in the White House, the things he's done, building a wall and cutting out different programs and making his family richer and richer, you know, robbing from the poor to give to the rich, you know, things that he's, I really can't say anything good that he's done. But he may have done something good, but because I'm not keeping up with the fact of anything that he's done, period, I don't know what he's done that was good. I know he's a liar. He lies from the time he opens his eyes until the time he goes to sleep. And when he dreams, he probably lies in his dreams. And it's sad that this country has to go through what they go through because of him. But in 2020, if he's elected president for 2020, woe is the world. That's all I got to say. Woe is the United States. Because before you know it, he'll have it so corrupt, so turned upside down, till people. And then the fact that racism has been so prevalent since this man has been in the White House, so it's pathetic. The Ku Klux Klan are the worst terrorists in the United States. They are the terrorists. Instead of getting rid of these Mexicans and people like that, get rid of the Ku Klux Klan. Disband them, break them up, get them out of the picture. They're running around killing, lynching people, doing what they want to do. And what does Trump have to say about that? Nothing. Because for real, he probably is a Klansman himself. You know, because we don't know. They put them hoods on, go through all that secret ceremony and stuff like that. But guess what? Every secret will be revealed. Every secret. They had a little secret, the Masons, the family, and the, can't think of the name of these other people, but all those secret codes and this and that and how you can get at them, being initiated, all that stuff will be revealed. I had a girlfriend, she joined the Morningstar. I asked her, I said, what was the initiation? I can't talk about it. If it's such a secret, then something is not right about it. Something is not right about it. Because I understand when they initiated the Masons, that this was what was told to me by a young man. Told me when the Masons are initiated, they have to have oral sex with the other Masons. Now, that's a lie. He told it, not me. It was told to me. So I don't know what the Morningstar is, what they have to do, what they have to say, or anything like that. But why is it such a secret that you can't talk about it? You know, but there's a program on Netflix called The Family. Check that out. Whenever you guys get a chance, go to Netflix and check out that program they have on there called The Family. It's an eye-opener. And it made me understand why Trump is the way that he is. I'm not going to give anything away about it. Watch The Family on Netflix, and you may come to the same conclusion that I came to, or you may not, but the conclusion I came to is that Trump, number one, he believes he is God. That's his problem. He believes he's God. So we're getting close to the end of the show. I'm going to play a song, and when we come back, the surprise that I'm going to give you guys.
Sure you haven't got the wrong number. You sure it's me you want to talk to tonight. Everyone in town got your number. Everybody's got you pegged right. Is that why you got in touch with me? Your goodbye was even colder than I. It didn't bother you, I was crying. And now you wanna break my heart twice.
in your little black book. Well, let me tell you what.
Tell you what.
I bet you forgot how I even look. So go ahead with all your sweet talking. Go ahead for all the good it can do. Have yourself a dime's worth of talking, and then I'm gonna hang right up on you.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to Delicious Talk. I was trying to get my surprise together for you guys, but the music, it just does what it want to do when it want to do it. This little segment is, you guys can remember if you guys can remember a while back when I was doing the Delicious Talk Show, people used to send me emails and letters about different situations they was in because my show was on a different plateau at that particular time. Well, I'm going to begin a little series at the end of the show where I read the letters and different things that they had sent me. And one letter a young lady sent me. Now, this was some years ago. She sent me a little email and it says, Miss Delicious, me and my husband have been together for 9 years, married 6. We had 3 beautiful children. After I gave birth to our 3rd child, my husband changed. He doesn't come straight home from work, and when he does get home, he takes a shower and goes to bed. When I questioned him about his new habits, he told me him and his co-workers hang out after work and eat and drink. We haven't made love for months, and when we do, it's always quickies. I suggest us going to counseling. He said everything is all right. My question, Miss Delicious, is my husband telling me the truth, or is he cheating on me? Okay. Let's sign Miss Heartbroken. Well, Miss Heartbroken, as far as your husband cheating, you know, sometimes when men change up their regular routine, there is something going on. Like if he starts going to the gym all of a sudden or hanging out suddenly, you know, those are the signs of him cheating. Now, you had suggested you guys going to counseling, which was a good suggestion, but he says things are okay. Now, my suggestion for you is to maybe be a little bit more vigilant in the things that he does and, you know, keep questioning him. And then, you know, maybe you need to ask him, I really prefer you come home and eat and drink dinner with me opposed to when you get home and go straight to take a shower. You know, there are different signs that you know, indicate when a man is cheating. I'm not saying that your man is cheating. It could be that he hangs out with his coworkers, but something, you know, is making him do that after the birth of your third child. He changed. And you're saying that even the lovemaking has changed. All he does is quickies. And something is going on there. Something definitely is going on there, but I would just be a little bit more attentive in things, you know, just tell him, well, you know, come home, I'll cook and we'll drink and eat together. And, you know, don't pressure him too much, because if he is cheating, that'll send him further and further out there. But maybe you guys need to go in and go to counseling. Just keep telling him, well, I need to find out what's going on. Straight up ask him. Don't be afraid to ask him, is he cheating? And if you feel he's lying to him, you just bring the points up. Well, why do you have to go out every night, like, seems like every night, and eat and drink with your friends when I cook dinner? You know, and then the fact that how his love pattern has changed up with you having quickies. You know, if you guys have marathon sex or good sex and all of a sudden he's just getting quickies, then there is something going on there. So my suggestion is to question him, ask him, you know, is he cheating on you? And then maybe you guys can talk, and if he tells you the truth, if you want to stay in the marriage, maybe y'all need to go to counseling. Or if you feel that you want to get out of the marriage, then, you know, that's up to you. But something definitely is going on. And like I said, I can't say he's cheating or not. And then after you had the third child, maybe something you may have triggered in him. I don't know. But just be a little bit more aware. If he keeps changing little habits, keep changing and, you know, things of that nature, maybe you should say to him when he gets home, let's take a shower together, and you can, maybe you might see some marks on him or something like that. But my thing is just do a little bit more investigation, or just out and out ask him, are you having an affair on me and why? And hopefully I've answered your question, dear. And with that being said, I have so many emails that were sent to me that I didn't read when I was doing Miss Delicious, but I'm going to be doing those near the end of the show, and hope you guys enjoy them. And anytime you guys want to put your input in or have something to say about it, feel free to call in. The call-in number is 646-652-2877 and give your opinion, because, you know, sometimes you need more than one person's opinion. My opinion may be right, it may not. Someone else may have something better to say, you know. So just on that note, Miss Heartbroken, I'm very sorry for what you're going through, and hopefully your husband isn't cheating on you. But like I said, just be a little bit more aware of the things that he's doing and the new habits that he's bringing around. Okay, so with that being said, thank you for sending me that letter again, as I said, and thanks to my listening audience this evening for tuning in and being with me for this hour and a half. I do appreciate you guys. I miss you guys. I love you guys. And I want to say a special shout out to all my listeners that are in, I have listeners in the UK, Canada, let's see, the UK, Canada, of course, the United States, Germany, and India. Thank you so much for listening to my show. I do appreciate that. And hopefully you guys will have a beautiful weekend and the rest of the week next week. And remember, put God first, and everything else will fall into place. This is your host, Miss Gail St. Francis Johnson, on If Life Gives You Lemons, Make a Martini Show. Everybody have a great night. Love you guys. And I also want to send out a shout out to my sister Ruby and her friend Nee, who is in town. They didn't get a chance to listen to the show because Ruby's out entertaining her friend. So, with that being said, everybody have a great weekend. Love you guys.
You just listened to the number one radio station on the internet, Delicious Talk Radio. Thank you and good night.